The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Asteroid mining sounds kind of like a sci-fi fantasy. I mean, how realistic is this?
What's possible is inevitable. Everything that was once sci-fi had to change at some point in time.
So this is a piece of an asteroid, right?
Yes, it is.
Could you theoretically create a spacecraft or 3D print a spacecraft in space if you're able to get your hands on these metals?
Absolutely. These are how we will build the future starships and future colonies and future habitats and space stations. We will use metals from asteroids to do that, and we'll use 3D printing as the technology.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, it's good to be here with you today. A little look at the future. Pretty cool stuff there. A lot going on. NASA's found the largest asteroid ever. And I'll have to fill you in on that. There's comets out there that could be worth quadrillions of dollars. I talked a little bit about it earlier in the program today. I want to talk to you about something else, and that's your money. Okay? How you doing with it, huh? Have you gone shopping to pick up food, and is it costing you more money? Are you experiencing inflation? Are you paying more for gas? Are you shocked at the skyrocketing cost of homes? Inflation is making a definite comeback in our country. You know, and it's really unfortunate. The new numbers for July are going to be coming out on Wednesday, but recent comments by the Fed chairman Jerome Powell, he indicated that the Federal Reserve, well, they're not as optimistic as it was at the beginning of the year when prices started to rise. That's not good news. That's not good news. Back then, you know, the Fed was saying, oh, this is temporary. And only a response, you know, we're going to have burgeoning growth. This is, don't worry about it. Now it's saying, well, you know, it's lasting a little bit longer than we thought. And, you know, there are indications it'll go longer than we originally said. To me, the question is, how much longer, right? For those of you who might be old enough to remember, if you can think back, it brings back dreaded memories, I know for some, of the 1970s. Now, again, I was just a kid, right? I don't really remember that. But I can remember seeing gas prices, you know, there were gas lines. You've probably seen the video of this stuff, right? People, you can only get gas based on the last digits in your license plates. Gas went from like 35 cents a gallon up to more than a dollar very quickly. And that's 1970 money, right? Food prices went up like they're doing right now. The personal consumption expenditure prices index rose 4% between June of last year and June of this year. So, like, we're seeing food prices rise. In fact, one stat I saw went up like 24%. In fact, I was watching a TV show. I can't remember the data right now in front of me, but they put up a chart, right? And they had, oh, maybe 9 different products that went up. Like, used cars are up like 43%. Housing prices are some astronomical number. Your groceries, your gas, your clothes. They went through this whole litany of things that we're experiencing. You're experiencing inflation. And along with this, right, is just the general social upheaval that we're experiencing at this moment. We're in a period of discontent, if you will. The summer is quieter than it has been in the past. We're not seeing the riots or the, you know, that we did in the past. But violent crime is way up. A couple of weeks ago, I saw a story where there were 100 people shot in Chicago, right? And that's just one city. I mean, you take a look at the type of violence that we're seeing across the nation. A group of Christians in Portland, Oregon had their prayer gathering in a public park broken up, apparently violently, by a group of Antifa thugs, right? That happened this weekend. And then you have people like Baronelle Stutzman and Jack Phillips who are losing their court cases. The whole vaccination thing is dividing our country. And, of course, you're seeing a push towards socialism. That's what a lot of people see happening. I mean, the government wants to spend $3.5 trillion, and they want to have all these handout programs. And, again, I'm all for infrastructure. That's a whole other conversation, right? But some of the other agenda items, it really should give us pause. It should just make us say, hey, raising the debt ceiling, that's a whole other issue. It's like, hold on. We should stop spending money and try to get this under control. You know, there's a difference between our time. You've got the Biden administration, you've got Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, you got the Schumers and the Pelosi's in control right now, right? Turn a hand's time back. What was going on in the 1970s, right? The 70s had the advantage that they were followed by the 80s and the Reagan Revolution. I mean, Ronald Reagan goes down as one of the great presidents in American history. The question is, and this is something I want to talk to my Reagan expert with, who's our next Reagan? Where is our Reagan? And if there is none, what does that portend for the future? I'm joined right now by a man who is right now doing research at the Reagan Library. He's at the Reagan Ranch. He's a man who wrote a number of different books. I know his latest, The Devil and Karl Marx. You know who I'm talking about, right? Dr. Paul Kengor, professor of political science at Grove City College in Pennsylvania. Great insight into Reagan, and he's working on some stuff I think you're going to really enjoy. And, Doctor, it's good to have you here with us today. What's the Reagan Ranch like?
Hey, Drew. Yeah, it's beautiful out here. I'm not actually at the ranch right now. I'm in Ventura, California, which is it's a beach town, kind of. It's probably about 40 minutes away from the Reagan Library. And, in fact, I should add this for this particular audience. Yeah, I've been here probably about 10 times, 10 different summers since the year 2000. Yeah. And 2000 was the first time I came here, and I used to walk by every day this massive statue of Junipero Serra, and, you know, Saint Junipero Serra. And when I first saw it, I was not Catholic, and it was something that I learned about, would teach my kids about, and we would take the kids to see that statue. And now here I am in August 2021, and the statue of Serra is gone. It's completely removed. It's been completely taken down. There's nothing there but an empty platform in front of City Hall. It's been shipped off to a warehouse somewhere, and that was done to protect Saint Serra from the mob with spray cans and pitchforks and torches and whatever else they were going to use to tear it down. So that's pretty sad to see. I mean, this is a state where, you know, everything is named for saints, right? Yeah. Santa Barbara, San Francisco, Ventura is actually named for Saint Bonaventure, up and down the coast. And the reason for that was a missionary, a Franciscan missionary named Junipero Serra, who founded California, and he has been canceled. He's been torn down, literally beheaded in Santa Barbara outside the mission there, and pretty much everywhere they could get a hold of him. So that all happened last summer. I guess the liberals are happier this summer because Trump isn't president anymore. But like you said, there's still a lot of discontent out there. But then again, they don't have any statues of Serra to tear down anymore.
Yeah, so true.
They've already gotten them. Yes. Yeah, so, you know, started with what? Stonewall Jackson, yeah, right, Drew? Yeah. And, you know, kind of Confederates. And then it eventually hit Lincoln, Washington, Columbus, and even a saint canonized by Pope Francis, of all things. That's where I am.
It's a slippery slope. It really is. And you saw what happened. You know, a little bit of good news just on the front of statues. A number of statues and churches, and this something gives me pause, Doctor, because they're being vandalized around the country. And I saw this. It was interesting. There was a study done before the genocide in Rwanda, Africa. And it seemed to be a demonic outbreak or fury. And, you know, churches were vandalized, statues were destroyed. And I've been reporting on it over and over and over again. Every time I see one, I just try to bring it to people, and I call them to prayer for God's mercy and his protection on our country. But you see these things, they give you a pause. Knights of Columbus just raised some money to pay for the restoration of two statues. One is Our Lady of Mercy Catholic Church in Queens, New York. And let's hope others follow their example to start raising funds to restore even more and get these Catholic statues especially back. When they tear down Lincoln, you know, that to me is, or Christopher Columbus, I mean, that's a whole other conversation for us, but I don't understand the purpose of that. And maybe we can talk about that just briefly, and then we can move on to where we are right now. But what's the purpose of ripping down the Great Emancipator, you know, or the man who discovered America?
Well, they are revolutionaries, and they convince themselves that guys like Serra were, you know, Indian killers, right? Rapists, you know, colonizers, and they, and these are things that they learn at their universities. They don't hear the opposite perspective. I mean, you talk about it should give them pause that if Sarah was able to reach the level of sainthood, vetted by the Vatican, approved by Pope Francis, but they don't know any of that. They're not learning any of that stuff. They don't know how any of that works. And you know, you and I talked about this a number of times. Often, when you're watching them tear down these statues, you literally go there and say, "What's your end goal? Right? What's the objective? What do you eventually want to do?" And sometimes they really can't tell you, other than that they want to tear down the old.
Yeah.
They want to tear down the foundation. And to me, that's a very kind of Marxist element of it, even regardless of whether or not they're Marxist, right? But Marx called for the ruthless criticism of everything that exists. Marx said everything that exists deserves to perish,
wow.
Right? And that's what they're doing. And by the way, kudos to the Knights of Columbus for doing that. And I would add, too, for people who are listening right now, I'm sure many of them associated with the Knights, I think a group like the Knights ought to be out there organizing men to protect parishes.
Amen.
Right? Training them, telling them what to do. Because, you know, the men in America, Catholic men in America, we don't need to just sit here and curl up in the fetal position and say, "Oh, I don't know what to do. They're ruining my church," right? I mean, can't we be men, right?
I love it.
I'm not saying stand at the front of the church with an AK-47, right? Men are protectors.
Amen.
You know, at the very least, you know, you do things technologically with cameras, with gates or something like that, but you know, step up, be a man up.
And
here in Ventura, I remember watching this on video a year or two ago. The only people protecting the outside of that statue was the priest from the mission and a bunch of 18, 19 year olds from Thomas Aquinas College. And remember the scene, Drew, they were protecting the statue of St. Louis in St. Louis, Missouri, and it was three or four girls out there, right?
Yeah,
you know, manning up and protecting the thing. Where were the men? Where were the Catholic men? When a mob comes to your town with spray cans, you're supposed to arrest them, right? Put a fence around the thing. Protect it. They don't have any right to come to your town and tear down the statues of people who founded your place 300 years ago. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I felt the same way as I was watching all those statues being toppled. I thought, if I was a cop, I don't care what, I'd arrest every single one of those people.
Yeah.
You know, every single one of federal monuments, all these different things. I mean, it was outrageous. You know,
it's a crime.
It is a crime.
If you or I walked out of where we are right now with a spray can and started spray painting a building, we'd get arrested in a second. But you could walk outside the Santa Barbara Mission and behead a bronze statue. I don't know how you do that, by the way. It's a crime. It's called vandalism. You can't spray paint I can't go spray paint "I love Susan, my wife," right, on a bridge on I-79 or I-80.
Right, right.
Without getting arrested. What right do they have to come and rip down a statue of Columbus?
That's so true. You have a problem, then use the proper, recourse. Let's use discourse. Let's not use spray paints or sledgehammers, but that's what we're seeing. We live in a strange time, and I know a lot of people are concerned. There's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of division that we've seen, over a lot of these different issues. The next big looming threat, I think, for a lot of people are economics. I mean, people are very concerned about what the future holds. And I'd love your take as a historian on whether or not we're reliving the 70s. Of course, you had Reagan in the 80s, and you also had other people there, too. John Paul II, Margaret Thatcher, right, in that particular period of time. But where are we? What's your take on all of this in terms of where we're heading with this administration, the big spending, and where the country's going?
Well, inflation right now is indeed really shocking. And I'll give you another California anecdote. When I crossed the border into California from Arizona, so to give you an idea, we're really driving all over the place. But I pulled up to the pump, and it said $5.50 a gallon.
Wow.
For gas.
Wow.
I know. And I looked at that and I said, I know it's 110 degrees here and my brain is frying, but is that correct? Is that right?
That's
correct?
Funny.
And then I thought, oh, California, liberalism, anti-environmental stuff. ecological stuff. Okay. That's part of it. And two, gas inflation. Now, I could tell you, I haven't seen $5.50 anywhere else, and I've been quite literally all over the country. But I'm seeing $3.50, $4. So yeah, we're definitely seeing gas prices higher than I've seen them in a long time. My poor son, who is 25 years old, bought his first car, Drew, a few months ago. And the poor kid, we could not find a used car, under 140,000 miles for like under $7,000. And I felt so bad for him. He literally wiped out his banking account. Wow. My wife and I gave him some money for a birthday present, right? Chipped in a couple $1,000s. It felt bad for him. But I told him, I said, you'll never see car prices this high, right? I mean, this is just horrible. And in fact, I looked at car prices for, we have a big family. I had to get a 12-passenger van. And I saw how much they were even for used 12-passenger vans. I said, forget it. I'm not buying a new car. I'm going to drive the one I have until it croaks on the side of the road. It's too expensive. It's too expensive right now. So this does, to some degree, the inflation, it's not as bad as the late 70s. But I don't know. It's quite possible we could be headed in that direction.
Yeah, I think a lot of Americans are experiencing what you are, too. My son is the same situation. His car died, so I gave him the one I was driving. He's supposed to pay me back on it, but I can't tell you how many miles. It was old. I've had it forever. And I said to him, take care of it, because when that goes, you're not going to be able to afford another car. Car prices, right, as I said, have gone through the roof. A car somebody bought 3 years ago, they could trade in and get the same value for it back today. And it's a concern. I mean, some people say, hey, look, the administration wants to lift the debt ceiling. They want to spend $3-4 trillion. Some people see it as socialism. How do you see that? Is this a harbinger of what is to come, something percolating beneath the surface of society for the past 50 years now, just coming to the surface? Or is this a short-term thing? It's based on who has the reins right now. And you've got the Biden administration with a very different view than, let's say, the Trump administration. And who knows who's going to have the steering wheel in just a couple years?
Well, with gas prices, it's a direct result of the Biden administration coming in, doing what the things that they've done on economic environmental policy with pipelines and canceling the pipeline. I mean, that's a direct byproduct of that. There's no question. And in California, in particular, environmental policies. So there's no question that's directly affecting gas prices. Car prices, this is a little complicated because of things that are going on in China with a chip that's being made to put in cars and manufacturing with cars. During COVID, there was nothing, people weren't traveling as much. And in fact, I'm experiencing this too as I'm driving around, and I noticed this almost a year ago. The whole rental car market is in complete chaos right now.
You're not kidding.
And people listening that work for Enterprise and some of those other places, they will tell you they've never seen anything like this. And you go to rent a car and you think, what's wrong with you guys? Don't you want to make money? You don't have a car for me? What are you talking about? They can't get cars.
You know what people are doing? They were actually renting U-Hauls to drive around because they couldn't.
I've seen a lot of that.
Because they couldn't. In fact, every year I go away with some friends, right? And we rent a car. There's like two other couples, my wife and I, and these two couples. And the car for the 5 days or however long, it's $400 or something. So everybody just chips in, right? So we were going to get the same vehicle again this year. It was $1,600. $1,600 for a couple of days. I'm thinking, that's insane. I mean, that's just crazy. Yeah. So, I mean, people are seeing it in all sections and all different quadrants here. What's the solution to this? I mean, if a person was to rise up today, doctor, let's say, with like a Reagan, and I know you're doing research on him for a new project right now, would society even follow that person, where he or she might lead? I mean, have we lost touch with, our past? We can no longer move forward in the right direction. Have people really lost their way? Is the moral compass, has it been so, tilted off course that people don't know up for down right now? If somebody with Reagan's abilities were to come say, hey, go this way, would people follow, or are people very happy with where they are right now? They've grown complacent. They want government to take care of everything for them.
Well, it's really interesting that you're saying this because last night I was with my family was with Mark Joseph and his family, and Mark is the producer of Reagan the Movie.
Yeah.
And that's the movie that's based on my Reagan book, The Crusader. It's the one that Dennis Quaid is in. And Mark last night was showing me clips from the film. So the film is now, they've filmed everything. All the shooting has been done. And there's a part in there where Reagan is inside the cabinet room, and he's talking to his cabinet, and he's explaining tax cuts. And now when you cut taxes, people are able to keep more of their money. And when they use that money, they're able to spend it. And by spending it or investing it or whatever they want to do with it or paying for kids' college, this helps to drive economic growth. And he's explaining all this contrary to the government doing stimulus and just printing money. And printing money is inflationary, and that's money that you have to pay back. And so Reagan is going through, and he's carefully explaining the benefits of a tax cut. And by the way, it's one of the reasons I'm here, because the Reagan Ranch this month is marking the 40th anniversary of when Reagan did his major tax cut. That was done at the Reagan Ranch on August 13th, 1981. But I was watching all of this on our Reagan movie with Mark Joseph, and I said to Mark, I said, look how Reagan is explaining this. Right. And it was verbatim, Drew. It was like right from what Reagan had said, right? So they weren't scripting this stuff. And,
right.
and I said, what we need right now is somebody to just get on a microphone, a president, and explain to people this basic common sense economics. And I told Mark, I said, 18 and 19 year olds would understand this.
Yep.
This is just common sense. And Reagan used to say all the time, well, you know, they called this Reaganomics, but I just called it common sense.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And it was. And he said, you know, when I was in Hollywood, I was in the 94% tax bracket. 94%.
Wow. It's ridiculous.
94%. Yeah. That was under FDR. Any income that Reagan made over $100,000 as in Hollywood was taxed at $94,000.
Wow.
94%. And Reagan explained that, you know, how that hurt him, how it hurt the people making the movies, how Reagan would decline to do another movie, and by declining that movie, the cameramen, the custodians, the people at the Warner Brothers lot, all these different people didn't get jobs. Right. They lost income. And you need somebody to explain that kind of stuff. Someone like Joe Biden or Kamala Harris or AOC, who've spent their entire lives in government, they can't explain any of this.
Right.
Yeah, we need somebody like that right now.
You're right. Hey, Doctor, I only have a minute or two left. I just want to follow up one other question for you here, because I've been following China a lot, their ambition to dominate and rule the world in a lot of different areas, the nuclear ambitions. What would Reagan say now about the Chinese Communist Party? How would he view that?
Yeah, it's a good question. And he once called them, quote, a bunch of murdering bums in the early 1970s. And that was under Mao, who was responsible for the deaths of over 60 million Chinese.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know what exactly he would say about right now. But he would, among other things, he would definitely be looking into the origins of the Wuhan virus to see if this did come out of a lab, if it was accidental or not.
Yeah.
And, you know, he wouldn't be a wimp about this. I mean, you know, this virus has completely destroyed the American way of life the last couple of years.
Yes.
And Reagan would have looked into it.
Well, Doctor, I'm grateful for you joining me. I know you're busy working on a great new project. I know you're on vacation as well, so enjoy your time off. People want to get plugged into any of your Reagan works or the Devil and Karl Marx, the best way to do that.
Oh, well, thanks. Just go to Amazon, type in Paul Kengor, and also I write frequently for the American Spectator, Crisis Magazine, National Catholic Register, and I teach at Grove City College. You
All
can
right.
check me
and
out
You can
there.
Check him out. His last name is K-E-N-G-O-R. All right. Stay with me. When we come back, Congressman Dan Lipinski, we're going to be stopping by. We got a lot to talk about. Stay with me.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Thank you. I can't believe I got one.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
888-914-9149.
Well, thanks for joining me. It's always good to be here with you. It's good to be back. Missed hanging out with you. It's been a while. And, of course, always love to have a good conversation. You're welcome to pull up a chair and join me at 888-914-9149. I've been following when I was on vacation, you know, the situation with Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York. And, you know, he wants to stay in his position. And you've got the president. You've got all sorts of people saying, hey, it's time for you to step down. And it's more than likely he's on his way out of office. But what's strange, though, is that he's not being impugned, you know, because of the thousands of elderly who were killed by his policies of sending people with COVID into nursing homes and to, you know, to recover. Instead, it's because he had this, you know, this apparently serial sexual harassment of staff members, right? And still, he's denying it and does not want to leave office. Cuomo, of course, is the son of Mario Cuomo, who was also a governor of New York and who's infamous for coming up with a formula that has been intoned by Catholics who support abortion ever since he uttered it in a very famous speech at the University of Notre Dame. And you probably remember this. I'm sure you heard it. You know, he came out and he said, oh, you know, while, you know, I support, you know, the church's teaching on abortion, I can't impose my personal beliefs on people, you know, of the state, right? That supposed distinction has led the Democratic Party, I think, down the road from making abortion safe and legal and rare. That was the mantra initially, right? Oh, no, you know, abortion, we just want to make it safe. We want to make it legal. And it's got to be rare. It is nowhere near rare. And as you've seen, it's not always safe, that's for sure. You know, we're living in a strange time. We really are. And that mantra where we can parse things, and Nancy Pelosi, Joe Biden, who are Catholics, you know, it's like, I'm Catholic, but, you know, the Clintons like to, you know, as the Clintons like to say, you know, they want to make the public pay for it as part of their platform. That's kind of what they want to do. So along the way, what happened was they tossed out Catholics who still believe in the basic idea of the Democratic Party, the party that, of the little guy, the downtrodden, right? I mean, your father or your parents, or you might be Democratic, right? And you probably are disenchanted. Like we can't be a one party system. It's impossible. I mean, having two parties is important. I've often said, hey, is three possible? And many experts say no, probably is not. We do ourselves a disservice though, because I think I think Catholics and the Democratic Party are dying, and I think Catholics and pro lifers are leaving the party. Because they can't be part of something that promotes a culture of death. They just can't do it. When it comes to the elections, this is a very tumultuous, vitriolic, very divisive issue. And it's a hard issue for a lot of people. They view the Democratic Party as the party of the little guy, the downtrodden. They want to support that. But then it runs amok. It runs contradictory to their beliefs regarding life and marriage and so many of these other issues. So what is it? What's a Catholic to do? You know, and what's the future of the Democratic Party? You know, they used to believe that the little guy, the downtrodden, was the person in the womb. They don't believe that anymore. You know, Robert Casey, who is the governor of Pennsylvania, he was governor back in the 90s, he has his name on the infamous Planned Parenthood versus Casey decision. He lost in court, and then he lost with his party, which they shut him down. You know, they shut him out, I really should say, of speaking at the national convention. And there's another man I know who went through the same thing. His name is Dan Lipinski. He had represented the land of Lincoln, the state of Illinois, 3rd congressional district, for about 16 years. He was there a long time. Good man, right? Pro-lifer. But because of that pro-life view, because of that position, it's so incongruous, right, with what the party stands for, they couldn't keep him in their party. They couldn't do it. Even though, you know, he's a Democrat through and through. So his party actually lobbied against him. You know, the party keeps moving further left on that issue, and his party ran a primary opponent against him who won. And as a result, Congressman Lipinski is out of office. And I think that's a tragedy. I think it's a loss for Illinois. I think it's a loss for the country. I think it's a loss for life. And he joins me today. I have invited him to stop by. Just give us perspective on the future of the Democratic Party and really almost the demise of the Catholic Democrat. What is the future of a Catholic Democrat? You might be Catholic. You might be a Democrat right now listening to me. But you're saying, oh, I just can't drink from that cup anymore. I just can't. And so what do you do? You may have real problems with the Republican Party. What do you do? And I know several Catholics who are in that situation. Congressman Lipinski, thank you for joining me. Thanks for your service. And it's always good to have you here.
Well, thank you, Drew. It's always good to be with you. And before I start, I wanted to go back to Bob Casey, who you're talking
yeah.
about.
Yep.
Bob Casey Sr., the true pro-life hero,
yep.
Was governor of Pennsylvania. In 1992, I was at the Democratic National Convention in New York City. And that was the year that they shut Casey out. They're trying to push him aside, and they put put the Pennsylvania and the Minnesota delegations in the second balcony of Madison Square Garden. Why Pennsylvania and Minnesota? Because those were strong pro-life states, and they knew there were a lot of pro-life delegates to the convention there, so they put them up there. So the last day of the convention, or next to the last day of the convention, I was going in, and there was someone who was put in one of these. There were one of these protester pens. There's only certain places where you can protest, and they had signs that said "Stop Abortion Now." I asked this person if I could have one of those signs. I took the sign into the arena. The Illinois delegation had much better seats up fairly close to the front. And so I had many people try to rip that sign out of my hands as I walked down the aisle, but I proudly held that sign up there at the 92 Democratic Convention. I'll never forget that. And at that time, we had, I think there were 5 members of Congress from Illinois, Democratic members, who were pro-life then. And now there, with my loss last year, now there are none, and just says a lot about the demise of Catholic Democrats in the past.
Yep.
You know, it's past 20, 30, 40 years, but it really accelerated in the last 10 years.
Yeah, I agree. I think there has been an acceleration, and I want to talk about that. But before I do, let me back up. I mean, I'm curious about your history. What made you get into politics? What was it that drove you to the Democratic Party? What was it that made you want to run?
Well, as you were saying earlier, Drew, the Democratic Party was always about the little guy, protecting the little guy, standing up for the little guy. And that's what I grew up with. My father was in politics. He was in the Chicago City Council. Then he was in Congress. And, you know, that's what I always believed, is that the role of a public official, elected official, is to help those who, you know, help make our country or whatever, wherever they're representing, do their best for the people, and especially stand up for the little guy, because he or she needs the protection more than anyone else. And I was always very interested in government politics, but I went to college, majored in engineering, then got a master's degree in engineering, decided I wanted to teach, so got to decide what I really love is government politics. Got a PhD in political science, was teaching political science, teaching about Congress. And then when my father decided that he was going to retire from Congress, it was an opportunity for me, but I had sort of closed the door on running for office before that, but I prayed about it. I talked to my wife. We'd been married only 6 months at that time, and I really felt called to do it because I wanted to. There are some things that I wanted to stand up for, and if I had that opportunity to do it, I felt that I should.
Yeah, well, I'm grateful that you did run, because you're one of those powerful voices that defended life and served the country with great nobility. I'll ask you a personal question here too. I'm just curious because as a Catholic and as a Democrat, how do you feel right now? I mean, because of your pro-life position, and this is such a you are on the right side of history. You know, those who are defending the child in the womb, you were on the right side of history, just as those were who championed, you know, the abolitionist movement. To have your own party turn against you, to run a primary opponent against you, you've been in office 16 years, right? And mm-hmm. vote you out of office. How are you doing with that? I mean, how do you feel? Have you ever thought about switching parties? You ever think about rerunning? And just how are you dealing with this? Is there anger, or how are you doing with that?
Well, I have to say, the night that it happened, the night that I lost that primary, was a very difficult night. But the next day, I had so many people contact me, thank me for standing up for life, standing up for what I believe, not backing down. You know, look, I knew I did the right thing.
Yep.
And
yes, you did.
I've always believed we are just called to do what is right. We're as Mother Teresa has said, or is reported to have said, that we are called to be faithful, not successful.
That's
it's up to God. So I fought hard. I've never worked harder in anything than that campaign that I lost in 2020. But I have absolutely no regrets, and I really believe God's calling me to do to do greater things.
Yeah.
So
I
immediately the next day just turned to, you know, what am I gonna do next? What does God have in store for me? What does He want me to do? And that's what I've been working on.
Yeah, Congressman, when God shuts one door, as you know, He opens another. So He's got you positioned for something, I think, very important and very great. If you're just tuning in, we're speaking today with former Congressman Dan Lipinski, and we're taking a look at Catholic politicians, and it goes for both parties. But you wonder about the Democratic Party, who right now is really championing the culture of death, and has lobbied for the redefinition of marriage, and whole lot of other things. And I know several Catholics, Congressman, who had been members of the Democratic Party, but left because they say, look, it's the party that left them, you know, and that's really what happened. I know when you entered, it's very different. You said over the past 10 years, there's been this acceleration, and now you're really seeing a very liberal faction, too. I mean, you've got some progressives in the party, too, that are really pushing things. What's the trajectory? What's the future of the Democratic Party as you see it? And what's going to need to be done to right the course, or at least to save the future of it?
Well, I always said I was staying in the Democratic Party to try to move it back in the right direction. I had so many people who came up to me and told me that they used to be Democrats, but because of the life issue, they no longer were, and I always told them I understand, but I was going to stay to fight. Now, something interesting that's going on right now in the Republican Party. I was at the Napa Institute Summer Conference a couple of weeks ago, and I spoke on a panel that Catholic Vote had, talking about the future of Catholics in politics. And there is it's interesting, in the Republican Party right now, there are a number of a couple of candidates. One is J.D. Vance, known for writing the Hillbilly Elegy, and Blake Masters. So Vance is running for the Senate in Ohio. Blake Masters running in Arizona. You also have a sitting senator, former presidential candidate, Marco Rubio,
yep,
who's talked about common good capitalism or common good conservatism, but they're talking about common good in the sense of Catholic social teaching. And they go back to, they all quote Rerum Novarum, mm-hmm, in Pope Leo the 13th. And so at the Napa conference, I talked about, is this truly going to be a turn of the Republican Party to caring more for workers, working families, in helping working families, being more concerned about people than in workers than just being focused on raising the GDP. That it has to be more. It can't be just about this abstract economic growth. Growth is good and important, but we have to make sure that's working for people. So, you know, I'm wondering where this is going to go in the Republican Party. I'm hoping that these candidates are successful, and they're successful in moving Republicans in that direction. I think the Democrats have to be very careful. They better wake up and understand that they have put they have put the progressive woke issues in front of the little guy, in front of the hardworking families of America, and I'm hopeful that the party wakes up and sees that they have to change and have to. You know, best ways, start accepting pro-life Democrats.
I love it. Well, stay with me, Congressman. When we come back, we'll talk more. I only have maybe 10 minutes with him. If you want to join me, you can get in now. 888-914-9149. Feel free to sound off, share your view, maybe your frustration, or ask your question. We're speaking today with Congressman Dan Lipinski about the future of both the Republican and the Democratic Party.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Drew Mariani is here for you on Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon and welcome. If you're just joining me, it's good to be here with you. I'm speaking today with Representative Dan Lipinski, served the state of Illinois for about 16 years. And I've invited him to just give us some perspective. You know, we're looking at the future of really Catholic Democrats. And it's just not just a Catholic issue, not just a Democratic issue. It's a Republican issue, too. The Catholic Democrat this nation once knew, you know, was a staunch advocate of the unborn and the worker, and that is no longer the case. And I was reading a piece earlier, and the person made a great point. They said, look, this is a loss worth mourning. It really is. It is a loss worth mourning. It offers I think a moral and a political opportunity for the GOP with an increasingly working class constituency, and we're seeing things change. I was talking earlier about how the Democratic Party was the it was the party of the underdog, of the working class. Where are we today? I mean, just think about it for a second. The Democratic Party has become more associated with rich and the influential. They have support from big tech, from Hollywood, just about all the media. I mean, you see these wonderful fundraisers and campaigns they're on during these presidential elections and the big celebrities coming out, right? Even big business is now tending towards the Democratic Party. Are we witnessing here in our country an evolution, a change, a transition, a transformation between the parties? Has the pendulum swung? Are things changing here? And is it an open door for the Republican Party? And I'm all about two parties. I've had Democrats for life on the show, and I think we need Catholics in both parties. I do. I think it's healthy for the country. It's healthy to make a strong, you know, republic. I don't want to see only one party. I don't think that's a good choice, but right now, things are changing, and it may open the door for the GOP in a new way. Will they take advantage of it? That's the big question. And Congressman Lipinski joins me right now. Your take on that. Are we witnessing a transformation between these parties? And you were making the point before we left that, you know, this might be an opportunity for the GOP. But it would be also a death. It'd be a real loss for the Democratic Party. And as I pointed out, I think it's important to have two healthy parties. But your thoughts on that, Representative?
Well, my hope is that the Democratic Party wakes up to this reality. I think that there are some in the party who saw what happened in the last election. They They saw that there was a real movement of more working class people towards the Republican Party. Still relatively, still not that large, especially when you're talking about Hispanics and blacks. But there was an uptick there, and that's because they feel alienated from the Democratic Party that they have known. And so I think it's really important. The question is this real populism, right, or are there going to be real issues, real policies,
yeah,
proposals that Republicans put forward that do help, yeah, working people in their families? Or is this going to be performative,
right,
populism where it's just, raging against big business, but never really do anything to help people out who are struggling? So that's the question for these common good Republicans right now, and it'll be interesting to see what direction they go, and if Democrats wake up to the fact that this could really be turning against them. And as you say, I think it's important,
yeah,
that. And that's why I've stayed in the Democratic Party, is, I'm trying to turn this party, especially on the life issue, but also on gender issues, where it's just gone completely off the rails.
You're not kidding. My guest today, former Congressman Dan Lipinski. We'll take a few of your calls. I have a few minutes left. If you're on hold, I'll do my best to get you on. If you want to get in, 888-914-9149. We'll start in Indiana. Rich, good afternoon. You're on the air with the Congressman. Hi, Rich. Go right ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, Congressman, I really look up to you. I'm originally from Chicago, and I was raised as a Democrat, and I've held a position in Indiana, as far as the Democratic Party, but I resigned a couple years ago because it went too far left. And it's against, I guess, myself being an elder statesman, I just seen them go too far left, and I just had a resolution that I had to change. And I feel a lot better, spiritually, that I made the positive change.
Well, I certainly do understand and appreciate that. It's easy to forget that when the Hyde Amendment, which was just left out of the spending bills by the House, that the Hyde Amendment, when it first passed in 1976, 45% of Democrats in the House voted for it, including 8 out of the 11 Democrats in Illinois. And even back in 2009, the first time the Affordable Care Act went through the House, 25% of Democrats in the House voted to say no federal taxpayer money for abortion. And so it's changed drastically, as I mentioned earlier, in the past decade, and it needs to change that drastically back the other direction. And it's a matter of working at it and showing the Democrats, even if they do not support life, that they understand the politics of this. And so I think that's very important.
Hey, Rich, thanks. It's good to hear from you today. I appreciate the call. Dave is listening in Niles, Illinois. Dave, you're on the air with Congressman Lipinski. Welcome.
Congressman Lipinski, thank you for a lot of your very good work and, again, a great radio program. We need you to help us bring back the Republican Party. The Republican Party is not on the correct path in this regard as well. We need good people like Congressman Lipinski to bring back the Republican Party. Get out of the Democrat Party. Send the proper message. Bring us your skills. We need them.
Well, I appreciate that very much. I don't have any plans to do that right now. As Drew asked earlier before, if I have plans on running again right now, I don't have any plans. But I never say never. So you never know what the future is going to bring.
Would you be open to changing parties, as Dave is suggesting?
Yeah. I'm, right now, when it comes to the House of Representatives, and I've written a good amount on this, is I'd be frustrated in either party,
yeah,
both because of there's such a demand that you just vote with the party, there's no room for individual thought anymore. That was also a great frustration of mine in the House, is everyone is just expected to follow their leader, and I'm not going to do that. And so that was a that was another problem, besides the fact that some Democrats wanted to get rid of me because of my position on the social issues. But it'd be tough to step in there. And again, I'm not just going to go there and do what a leader, Democrat or Republican, tells me what to do.
Right. Well, Congressman, I have about a minute left. My apologies, everyone on hold. But if people want to follow you or get in touch with you or track down the work you're involved with, what's the best way to connect?
DanLipinski.com. You can find everything that I've been doing, when I'm things that I write, anytime I speak, and you can also contact me through that website. So I want to make sure people understand that they can contact me there also, because I've been getting message in a lot of different places that people pass on. But Easiest place is danlipinski.com.
All right. Well, we'll see what the future holds for you. And I look forward to our next conversation. It's always a lot of fun. That's Congressman Dan Lipinski. Website, danlipinski.com. The last name is spelled this way if you want to check it out. LIPINSKI. I am out of time for the afternoon. So grateful to be able to spend my afternoons with you. Want to welcome once again Maggie to my show team. It was her first day here. She did a great job. We'll be back in 21 hours. We'll talk then.